serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a colorful and wide-ranging visit today with a spirited nonagenarian named Albert Mazzetti. Born in Michigan, he has spent most of his adult life in California, where he just ran for governor. And he'll tell you, he's only 12 years older than the current occupant of that office, Jerry Brown. Albert has been a school teacher, an administrator, a police officer, a city councilman, but he wouldn't have had the opportunity to take on any of those challenges if he had not survived some major battles in the Pacific as a Marine machine gunner. We've heard some of his memories from battles like Guam and Saipan, two of the 19 different Pacific islands he set foot on during World War II. And as we hear some of those opinions that he holds so strongly, perhaps you'll agree, perhaps you'll disagree, but let's all remember that Albert, like so many other young Americans in World War II, put his life on the line so all of us would have the freedom and liberty to express our opinions. And I'd like to hear a little more about those experiences in the Marines.
I've never been in combat. Most of the people listening have never been in these situations. Can you give us an example of a moment where you think, you know, I was this close? That could have ended it for me.
All I can say is, in combat, God's either with you or luck is with you, you know? Because I've had a guy right next to me drop dead, you know? Or get seriously wounded. Why wasn't it me? Why you? Sure, you're always asking that question. You know, or an ambush, you know, you get ambushed. Yeah. When I was 17, I killed that Japanese soldier. Why didn't he shoot at one of my men? Why did he shoot at me? You know what I mean? Sure. Oh, yes. That's a good question. Oh, yeah. So I don't know. You can either say God was on my side or I was lucky. And I prefer to say that God was on my side.
What about the end of the war? Was that big news for you to hear the Japanese had surrendered?
Not really. The job was more important. I mean, I had a job to do. And, you know, to come, hey, nice going. For what? I did my duty. I did what had to be done. I don't belong to any vets organization. But I go in there and all they're doing is playing cards and they're smoking and drinking. And I don't do those things, you know. I want to do something where I can help somebody. I want to be me. And I'm not denigrating what they do, but it's just I wouldn't be comfortable. First of all, I don't smoke. I never smoked. I don't drink, and I don't even know what alcohol tastes like. I don't want to because I know that I might like it, and I don't want to like it because I know that as a police officer, I picked up little kids in the street. Their fathers have been drunk. They killed their kids, and their father's drunk and with their mother in a car. And I'm picking their little child up. You know what I mean? So I've been through that. You name it, I've done it.
Well, and I think people would be interested to hear, because there is certainly a parallel with our veterans who are coming home today. Maybe the understanding was different 70 years ago than it is now. But when you came home from the war, it wasn't just snap your fingers and jump back into action. Tell me what you went through when you got home.
Well, as I say, I sat for 3 weeks and I cried all day. I couldn't stop, and I didn't know what I was crying about. To this day, I don't know what I was crying about. I mean, I thank God for God's taking care of me. I could have, now that I know, you know, that they've given it a name and all that, it could have gone the other way, and I could end up in the toilet or something, you know, or taking drugs or something. But it never happened to me, thank God.
What finally got you through that, got you over it or past it?
Well, I fall back on the fact that God must have a plan for me, because I'm amazed that even the way I am now, I'm almost 100 years old. And women, I'm telling you, we go to the dances, they think I'm 40 years old. And I can do anything. Is there going to come a day when I'm going to be like this, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe. I don't see myself that way. I want to be the president of the United States of America, mm-hmm. because America needs a lot of help, and I want to help Donald. It just hurts. It breaks my heart that Donald isn't sitting here. You know, if he comes here, I'm going to ask you to come, too, because you ask a lot of good questions. You're the kind of guy, you're not an I, me person, are you? No, you're a we, us person. But see, most people, you know, they're what can I get out of, you know, mm-hmm. What's in it for me?
It strikes me that if that had been the collective mentality during World War II, that we probably wouldn't be speaking English right here.
Correct.
Right.
See, you're too quick. I can't think that fast. Yeah.
Well, you know, and let me ask you that. You know, you mentioned a name in there that I think people who've studied World War II, they've heard. And over time, he's come to almost epitomize the picture of a Marine. Like, if you see a Marine's picture on the wall, it's probably Chesty Puller with that scowl on his face. It's famous guy.
Tough guy.
And you actually spent some time around him?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Everybody. All Marines know Chesty Puller.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what kind of guy was he if you were around him?
He was about my size, only he was built like a... I mean, he was built. His frame... See, my frame isn't big. His frame was big, like yours.
What about his personality? How did he treat you?
Oh, he was a good guy, but I mean, you know, everybody knew Chesty Puller.
You hear a lot of things about Marines. Once a Marine, always a Marine. They talk about Semper Fi, Semper Fidelis, always faithful. What about you? What does it mean to you? What has it meant to you for these last 75 years to be a Marine? How would you define what a Marine really is?
That's a good question. The reason it's a good question is I'm an old-time Marine. A big, handsome guy like you to be a Marine, and there were a lot of you in the Marine Corps, big like you, you know? I don't know how you would see it, but first of all, you got to be protective. I don't care. You can be bigger, smaller, or short, or fat, or thin, or whatever. You've got to have a protective tendency, and you've got to be a servant of the public. Those are tantamount to success, because if you're not, then you're not going to be a good Marine, because that's what Marines do. They protect, and they're servants of the public, and that's all they are. Since time immemorial, Marines have been that way.
Have you ever been to the Marine Corps Memorial at Arlington National Cemetery, the big Iwo Jima statue?
No.
There's a quote on there. It's from Admiral Nimitz, and it says, "Among the Marines in the Pacific War," you've probably heard this quote, "uncommon valor was a common virtue."
That's true. That's why we never call anybody a coward. Never call it, because you just never know. You just do your job.
Are there some Marines you served with or you remember that you think really epitomize that, that you look back on and say, those guys were my heroes?
All of them. When I was in the Marine Corps, that's the way the Marine Corps was, and that's the way the Marine Corps should be. And I'm going to tell you something. There's an article in the paper. They want old-time Marines. I'm thinking of throwing my hat in the ring.
You want to reenlist at 92?
I don't know. I'm going to ask them. I've got it. It's right here. The Marines, they need guys like me that have been through it.
Well, you run 3 miles a day. You probably pass the physical, right?
Oh, yeah. So I don't know what I'm going to do, but I brought the newspaper home because that's me.
I didn't ask you, are there any medals, decorations I should know about?
Oh, yeah. Well, the one that we laugh about is I was top shooter in the battalion, you know, little old Albert, you know. And they had 500 Marines out there on the blacktop, and the general comes out with a big medal, and he calls me out, you know, Sergeant Albert Mazzetti, yes, you know, and pins that medal on me and all that, you know. I don't go for that stuff. I don't go. I have them all, and I wear them all and all that, but I don't need it. I know who I am.
Well, speaking of, at 92, almost 93, what would you say you're most proud of or most thankful for?
That's a good question. I'm thankful that that I am who I am. I've never done anything wrong or never dishonored my name. And I've dedicated myself, with God's help, to make this a better world, to make this a place for people to feel secure. And I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that no one harms our great democracy that America is. They left Italy to come here. Just imagine, and the people that come here, because America is America. America's, look at the people that come from Mexico. And then that's another thing I'm going to take up with Donald. Donald, you know, send me back, because I'm here because I'm an immigrant, you know, Donald. So go easy, Donald. Go easy.
For those of us today who didn't live through World War II and that time in our history, what do you think is the most important lesson that we can learn from those of you who did and everything that you guys went through during that time?
Be good to each other. Be kind. Don't worry if a person is a Muslim or a Christian or You know, those things don't matter. They don't matter. I mean, you know, God made those people just like he made you and me. And I see myself as father of all of the people. If I was the governor of California, I would tell them, you're my children, and I'm going to take care of you. You know what I mean? And I would. And that's why if I run for president of the United States, and I think I tell Donald that, don't I? Something like that, that act like a father to these people. You know, Donald, you know?
I got to, there's one thing I can't forget to say. I got to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country. Well, thank you for telling us about it.
I did my duty.
Yeah, is there anything else you think we ought to know?
Help me to become president of the United States of America, because I think America needs me.
I don't know if we can find you enough votes for that, but, you know, you could have a free flight to Washington, D.C. to see the National World War II Memorial because of Honor Flight, if you're interested in that.
Let me do this. Let me, as president of the United States of America, go look at that memorial. We'll go together. How's that?
Well, maybe we'll take you there and we'll see if Donald can come out and say hello.
That wouldn't be bad. Yeah. If you can get Donald here, I just think you're wonderful. Try, will you?
Well, we might have to take you to D.C. to do it.
Donald's got he's got Air Force One. He could come here and
yeah, that's true.
And he could bring his family. And it would be, you know, he doesn't have to be afraid to come to here. I'm not going to hurt anybody.
Well, all you can do is keep extending that invitation. Our 45th president has a reputation of being a little unpredictable, so you never know, right? If he does end up in Manteca, California one of these days, perhaps we'll have Albert Mazzetti to thank for that. Before we wrap up, there's one more thing I'd like to address, and it has to do with our 33rd president and how a decision that he had to make affected the life of Albert Mazzetti and the rest of our military in 1945, not to mention the rest of the world. You've probably heard quite a few of his predecessor FDR's speeches, but have you ever heard President Harry Truman addressing the nation after deciding to deploy atomic weaponry against Imperial Japan? Well, I know I never had, so I thought I'd share some of that with you before talking to Albert about the impact of that decision. Here's President Truman on August 9th, 1945.
My fellow Americans, I have just returned from Berlin, the city from which the Germans intended to rule the world. It is a ghost city. The buildings are in ruins. Its economy and its people are in ruins. War has indeed come home to Germany and to the German people. It has come home in all the frightfulness with which the German leaders started and waged it. The German people are beginning to atone for the crimes of the gangsters whom they placed in power and whom they wholeheartedly approved and obediently followed. We also saw some of the terrific destruction which the war had brought to the occupied countries of Western Europe and to England. How glad I am to be home again, and how grateful to Almighty God the land of ours has been spared. We must do all we can to spare her from the ravages of any future breach of the peace. That is why, though the United States wants no territory or profit or selfish advantages out of this war, we are going to maintain the military bases necessary for the complete protection of our interests and of world peace. No one can foresee what another war would mean to our own cities and our own people. What we are doing to Japan now, even with the new atomic bomb, is only a small fraction of what would happen to the world in a third world war. That is why the United Nations are determined that there shall be no next war. That is why the United Nations are determined to remain united and strong. We can never permit any aggressor in the future to be clever enough to divide us or strong enough to defeat us. That will be the guiding spirit in the peace settlements to come. The results of the Berlin Conference have been published. The conference was concerned with many political and economic questions, but there was one strictly military matter uppermost in the minds of the American delegates. It was the winning of the war against Japan. On our program, that was the most important item. The military arrangements made at Berlin were, of course, secret. One of those secrets was revealed yesterday when the Soviet Union declared war on Japan. The Soviet Union, before she had been informed of our new weapon, agreed to enter the war in the Pacific. We gladly welcome into this struggle against the last of the Axis aggressors, our gallant and victorious ally against the Nazis. The Japs will soon learn some more of the military secrets agreed upon at Berlin. They will learn them firsthand, and they will not like them. The British, Chinese, and United States governments have given the Japanese people adequate warning of what is in store for them. We have laid down the general terms on which they can surrender. Our warning went unheeded. Our terms were rejected. Since then, the Japanese have seen what our atomic bomb can do. They can foresee what it will do in the future. The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base. That was because we wished in the first attack to avoid, in so far as possible, the killing of civilians. But that attack is only a warning of things to come. If Japan does not surrender, bombs will have to be dropped on her war industries, and unfortunately, thousands of civilian lives will be lost. I urge Japanese civilians to leave industrial cities immediately and save themselves from destruction. I realize the tragic significance of the atomic bomb. Its production and its use were not lightly undertaken by this government, but we knew that our enemies were on the search for it. We know now how close they were to finding it, and we knew the disaster which would come to this nation and to all peace-loving nations, to all civilization, if they had found it first. That is why we felt compelled to undertake the long and uncertain and costly labor of discovery and production. We won the race of discovery against the Germans. Having found the bomb, we have used it. We have used it against those who attack us without warning at Pearl Harbor, against those who have starved and beaten and executed American prisoners of war, against all pretense of obeying international laws of warfare. We have used it in order to shorten the agony of war, in order to save the lives of thousands and thousands of young Americans. We shall continue to use it until we completely destroy Japan's power to make war. Only a Japanese surrender will stop us.
Harry Truman deciding to deploy that atomic bomb. Do you think it saved your life?
I know it did, because you know it's very profound that you would ask me that question, because on the few days before the bomb was dropped, we got word, the 2nd Marine Division, we were going to be the initial landing on Kyushu. Kyushu is the mainland of Japan. And we were told that you're not going to make it this time, you guys, because we're going to be in the homeland. And they're going to kill, for the first 2 hours, there's going to be about 100% casualty. And so I wrote my mother, and I told her, I said, Mother, I said, I've been lucky so far, but we're not going to be lucky this time, you know. And she prayed for me, and of course, you know, and I prayed, and thank God Truman dropped the bomb. He saved my life, and he saved all the Marines' life, because the trying to take the homeland away from the Japanese would be an impossible task for the first couple of hours. We would eventually do that, but for the first 2 hours, it would be just mayhem. And there's no way anybody, no Marine would live through it. In fact, we were told that. So thank God for the atomic bomb.
And of course, we will continue to hope and pray no commander-in-chief ever has to make that decision again. We're out of time, but I bet you heard a few things you hadn't heard before over this last hour. I know I did. Thanks again to Albert Mazzetti and to a Hometown Heroes listener named April for letting us know about his story. I'm Paul Leffler, hoping you'll join us again next time as we are reminded once more through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.